Now, I know there is a huge sense of frustration for many listeners about how to make a meaningful contribution to the fight against COVID-19 when you're stuck at home. One way is to offer food relief to support starving households. And as I mentioned before the song, I have written up an article for the Cape Talk website. So if you still haven't decided where to direct yourself in that regard, you'll find some suggestions posted there. But here's another way you can help. If you happen to have a 3D printer at home, there's a very important way you can contribute. In fact, people all over the country are already hard at work using their personal and corporate 3D printers to manufacture face masks and protective shields for use by healthcare workers on the front line. It started with a man named Bernard Vogt, whose company, Additive Manufacturing Solutions, had access to 3D printers and to the filament that was needed to produce personal protective equipment. He pledged to use his facilities to help. He put out a call for others to join him. And there was a flood of people saying, yes, I'm sticking up my hand, I'll help. The result is a network of 3D hobbyists and repurposed manufacturing units, which are working day and night to churn out face screens, reusable masks, even valves that could allow a single ventilator to keep four different patients breathing at the same time. It is quite remarkable what is happening in people's homes, making good use of their time in lockdown. And to give us a sense of who's answered the call, what is being produced and where it is all going, I'm delighted to welcome on the line Michael Skultz, who is one of the coordinators of 3D Community, as it's known. Michael, great to have you with us. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you very much for having me.
How many people have signed on to help? How big is the 3D community as we speak?
It's hundreds. I can't actually give you the exact number of people. I can give you a rough idea. We've got various groups with anything from 250 people, you know, 90 people in another group. The other one, I've got 60 or 70 people in another group. So we're working over various platforms, like Facebook, Discord, WhatsApp, and we are trying to consolidate it, but we've got hundreds of people ready to help, in whichever capacity they're capable of.
That's fantastic. I mean, talk to us about the kind of products that are being produced, Michael.
So the two main things that are being produced is firstly, face shields. Face shields are, you know, fairly straightforward to make on something like a 3D printer. And essentially, it just protects your face from the ingress of flying parts, you know, microparticles and things like that from reaching your eyes, nose, and face. Mm-hmm. The second thing is the face mask that we're printing, which is more specialized, and we tend to be reluctant to just hand that out to anybody. And say, here's a face mask that's going to protect you, because you need to have a certain amount of skill to wear one of these things. So we generally reserve those for emergency services and some other, you know, sort of frontline workers that have actually asked us to get involved and provide them with this sort of equipment.
Okay.
There are various things and there are various ways that we are trying to help. We're also trying to evolve in how we are helping. The material face masking, where people can sew these at home, is very, very useful, because it means that it's another resource that comes into it. Mm-hmm. And it does allow us to say, well, where can 3D printers be the most useful at this point in time?
And keep yours for those who are on the front line, while others who need them less have got the option of the fabric version. Absolutely. Michael, 100%. I'm interested in the designs. I know a lot of people have been saying, here's my design, I'm making it available open source. Is that the way you're working, or have you gone to specific places to look for the right sort of design for the things that you're making?
We evaluate the designs as closely as we can. What we will do is say, right, we've got two or three designs to us. From an engineering point of view, we'll say, this looks awesome. We'll hand it to a doctor who'll go, not so much.
Okay.
And then we'll keep looking. So there are people who've done their own designs. There are 100 people sharing designs, which is absolutely spectacular. It is very much an open source community, which means that we love sharing information with other people. And it means that the designs and everything that's coming out of the community is very free and open, which means we can evaluate the design. There is a flip side to that again, because you have a lot of people saying, oh my goodness, what about this one? And then they can derail a conversation or a topic for a little while, when they say, oh, I found this, why don't we print this? And then we have to say, no, stay on track, this is what we want.
Yeah. Because I would imagine, I mean, I know medical supplies are highly regulated. They've got to be checked in terms of quality control. There's a mountain of red tape around them at the best of times.
Exactly.
Once you've found something that works, that has been approved, that is up to scratch, it's really important that you stay focused on that and not get derailed by things that might not actually end up meeting those criteria.
100% right. You know, the masks that we're making are not made in a laboratory under a controlled environment. So the people we speak to, we stress to them, when you give these things, you need to give them to people who know how to work them. They need to know how to sterilize these masks themselves to be able to reuse them. So that's, once again, why we don't just want to say, okay, you know what, this is a cool-looking mask, you can use it for home use, because it really isn't. It is more specialized. So
yeah.
So we are trying to control how these things get used, and at the end of the day, what we want to do is free up the higher level resources for the ICU labs and the doctors who really, really need those N95 masks, because what goes into those things, and I'm not a doctor, but the little bit that I've learned over the last couple of weeks about it is mind-blowing how those things are actually constructed. And to try and do that from a 3D printing on a general level is a challenge. So we're trying to meet the demand, and we're trying to free up those very, very specialized resources at the higher level.
Okay. Michael, now, as you say, it's wonderful that hundreds of people have stuck their hands up and say, we've got a 3D printer, we'll help. It's not as simple as that, though. We're talking here about raw materials being needed, and those come at a price. Talk to us about the costs involved in printing at home and who's covering them.
So this is what most people don't understand when we sort of say this is how we're doing it, and they've all got silent. We had the article on Carte Blanche a couple of weeks ago, and the first phone call I got the next morning was somebody saying, I want to buy 40,000 of these things.
Wow.
And it was just a simple answer of no, because that's not how we've been working. The prints that have gone out for probably 99% of the people out there are doing it out of their own pockets with a filament that they've bought out of their own pockets. So this is a community-sponsored project from the people who are actually making these things. So we are not sponsored by anybody. We are trying to raise funds. It's going very, very slowly. But then redeploying those funds usefully is just as difficult, because there's such a limited supply of suppliers. We can't get the suppliers because they're all in lockdown as well.
Mm.
So people are printing with what they've got, and it does cause a lot of attrition under the printing community, because as people are running out of filament and not able to resupply, they can't keep printing. So I think that the extension of lockdown has made a lot of the filament suppliers say, look, it's worthwhile investigating for them to see if they can actually open up, because it has now been identified as a critical resource in what we're doing. And we hope that those will come online more. There are some suppliers that are open, but we're not sure how legitimately they are open with regards to what they're doing. We obviously feel that it is a resource for them to be available, that we need them. But it is coming online very, very slowly.
Okay, so one hopes that there will be an opportunity to get filament suppliers back into the network so that they can keep supplying you to keep on making these. In the meantime, Michael, you mentioned that there is a fundraising campaign going. I mean, not every listener is going to have access to a 3D printer, but if they like what you're 100%. Doing, can ordinary people contribute to that fundraising? And if so, how?
Yes, absolutely. Now, when we set out on this, we were very adamant that we do not want to touch money at all. We are not a registered NPO. We're not going to register, and I'm not going to have people pay money into my bank account, because that would just give me a reason to not be above board. So we've partnered with WISA, the Water Industries of Africa. They are a registered NPO, and they have set up a bank account and the fundraising and everything else for us, ring-fencing those funds so that it is available for us to use as we need, which is essentially to acquire filament and be able to do that, or at the very least speak to suppliers and say, right, we can organize a mass discount for the people who are printing underneath us, if we know who they are, so that they can get filament at a reduced cost. We've also set a proviso that any funds not used for that, we'd like to assign to underfunded schools to actually promote things like 3D printing and maker labs in those schools. So,
okay. So the website where all of the details of how to donate and get involved if you do have access to a 3D printer is 3D Community SA, and that's the digit 3, the letter D, communitysa.co.za. Michael, a quick question. Somebody's asking on our WhatsApp line, are you using any kind of anti-fog treatment on the plastic masks? I gather that is one of the problems people encounter when wearing them.
So with regards to the face shields, they are made in such a way that there's quite a standoff on the face. There are a lot of people coming online and making them much, much cheaper, which we really appreciate, but some of those do fog up. With the face shields, there is quite a substantial standoff, so that does help to actually have airflow through to the top. Some of them are closed at the top, but it depends on the application. The face masks themselves need to seal on your face pretty well for them to be able to seal and only draw in air through the filter. So those ones, it's not necessarily a problem with fogging, because if it is fogging up to your glasses, your seal isn't proper.
Okay.
And once again, a reason why medical people who know how to use something like that should be using them.
Michael Schultz, thank you so much for that update. Well done to you, and thank you to you and everybody else who raised a hand to say, I can help and I'm prepared to help at significant cost to themselves in time, in resources, in purchasing of that filament. We hope you're able to continue generating more of those face shields and masks for those who desperately need them. And well done to you and the team. For more information, please visit www.3dcommunitysa.co.za.